Good evening. I was talking with some just before services about some of the football games, talking about Tim Tebow just a little bit. I went to the congregation where his family attended and knew a lot of things about Tim, all the same congregation that Colt McCoy grew up in, and so two interesting athletes that are very different than your normal ones that we see today. But, you know, I read a stat yesterday or the day before that 45% of Americans believe that God's helping Tim Tebow on the field. I just really think that the NFL is probably a little beneath him. I think God's got bigger things on his plans than the winner of a football game. And really, I think if God was helping a football team, they'd be undefeated. No one could beat them because no one ever beat a team that had God's on their side anyway. So, you know, I hate to see people bringing God to such a shallow level as to a football game. I remember Colt McCoy saying after they won the Big 12 championship and somebody asked him something about his religion afterwards, he said, "I was not put here by God to play football." And I thought, amen. He said, "I was put here for much more important things. I'm blessed to play football, but God didn't put me here to play football." And we hear a lot of players say that, and they were put here to serve God, not to play football, and same for each and every one of us. Tonight we continue our People God Wants You to Know series. I don't know if you call that a series. I mean, there's no set into it. We just do it on third Sunday nights. But the people that God wants you to know. And tonight we're going to talk about King Hezekiah. I always remember Hezekiah. It always kind of sticks in my head because when I went to interview at the Bear Valley Congregation in Denver, Colorado, you know, at an interview, you're pretty much worn out by Sunday night. I mean, you've been drugged here, there, and everywhere. And this place was the worst, by the way. Y'all had me scheduled from Friday about 3 o'clock till Monday morning. And we were just glad to find somewhere to collapse when it was all said and done. But by Sunday night, you know, you're kind of just in a daze. And one of the teenagers came up, John came up. And John, I still have contact with him, and he is just a goofball. I didn't know him that well at the time, and I guess, you know, he was a young kid. I wasn't paying just a whole lot of attention to him. There was other things I was engaged with. And he said, "Have you ever done a lesson on Hezekiah, on the book of Hezekiah?" And I just didn't think. You know, it's a kid. I wasn't given the full amount of attention I should have. I was thinking, you know, I just finished a sermon series on the minor prophets, and I guess I just slotted the book of Hezekiah into the minor prophets, okay? I said, "Yeah, I have." And I never have lived it down. He asked me all the time, he goes, "So you're still teaching out of the book of Hezekiah?" Hezekiah is not a book. if some of you are not getting what I'm saying. there now, everybody's with me. And so, you know, but tonight we're going to talk about the man, King Hezekiah. He began reigning in Jerusalem over the southern kingdom of Judah in 728 B.C. Probably began as a co-ruler with his father. So many people today, though, as we look at Hezekiah, so many people today can blame history or they can blame family or whatever for the things that they do. And yet Hezekiah had that opportunity in spades to be able to blame where he came from. Hezekiah is a great example that we can be better than our past. We can be godly in spite of anything that has happened to us in our lives. You know, you see, Hezekiah's father was probably one of the most ungodly kings that Judah ever had. His name was Ahaz, and he practiced idolatry. And not only did he practice idolatry himself, but he promoted idolatry and pushed idolatry upon the southern kingdom. Ahaz, in 2 Kings chapter 16 and verse 3, even went so far as to sacrifice one of his own sons in a pagan ritual. This was a bad man. You know, this was a man that was evil to the absolute core. He did not trust in God. That text that we have in Isaiah chapter 7, that there will be one born of a virgin, that prophecy was the prophecy given to him in Isaiah chapter 7 in regards to him trusting in God to protect the southern kingdom from the attacking of Syria and Israel. But he did not trust in what Isaiah told him that day, but instead he allied himself with the Assyrians. He hired Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, to go and to attack Damascus or the Syrians and to destroy them. And Tiglath-Pileser, who was planning to do it anyway, was more than happy to take Ahaz's money and to do it. Well, while in Damascus, he went up to Damascus after Tiglath-Pileser conquered the Syrians. He went up to Damascus and he met with him to pay him for doing what he had promised to do. And while he was there, Ahaz saw this beautiful altar to this pagan god. And he thought, man, I really like that thing. And he said, I want that altar right there. And he brings that altar back to Jerusalem and replaces the altar of God in the temple with this pagan altar. See what kind of guy we're dealing with when we think about Hezekiah's father? He would eventually go ahead and just straight up shut down temple worship, lock the doors, and not only that, he would then build pagan altars on every corner of every street in the city of Jerusalem for the people to offer incense to idols. He led the people down a very dark path, as we see in 2 Chronicles 28:24. That's where it talks about the altars on the corners. That was the man that raised, or was Hezekiah's father. And yet Hezekiah would turn out to be one of the finest, best kings that Judah ever had. Probably one of the most spiritual kings that Judah ever had. 2 Kings chapter 18 and verse 3 states about Hezekiah, he did right in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father David had done. You know, they always talked about the father David. To those that did good, they walked in the steps of David. Those that did bad in the northern kingdom, it was always they walked in the steps of their father Jeroboam, son of Nebat. But here, he didn't walk in the footsteps of Ahaz. He walked in the footsteps of a man after God's own heart. He lived like David did. And he was praised for it. He was so different than his father. It would have been easier. In fact, if you think about it, it would have been easier for him to simply follow the steps of his father and go down the path of unrighteousness. Instead of wallowing, though, in the lack of godly parenting, he rose above it to serve God. He rose above it to become someone great in the kingdom of God, in the nation of Israel. So he was the great king like David. Hezekiah instituted many reforms as king. He reopened the temple that his father had closed. He went down to the temple. He opened the gates and he reinstituted the activities that would go on there. He repaired the damage that had been done by neglect and on purpose by his father. He purified, he cleansed the temple in 2 Chronicles chapter 29. He prepared the temple for service to God once again. And when he had done that, he resumed sacrifices. He resumed the services of praise to God there in the temple that had long been stopped. Then he called together the people and he wanted to celebrate a great Passover. I mean, obviously, the temple's been closed down. Paganism has taken charge. The Passover has been neglected. He calls for a great Passover. And not only does he just call for the people of Judah, he calls for the people of the northern kingdom to come too. You know, they've stopped coming. Remember, they have an idol now in Dan or Bethel to go to worship instead of having to go to Jerusalem by the plan of Jeroboam the first. But here, he calls for them. These are the people that his father was fighting. And yet Hezekiah says, I don't want to fight with you. I want to bring you closer to God. Come back. Come to the great Passover feast that I am preparing. You know, he delayed the Passover by necessity. He wanted to do things the way that God wanted them done. He didn't want to cut corners. He didn't want to do things that were not right. So he delayed the Passover till the second month. The Passover comes in the first month of the Jewish calendar. In fact, their calendar began on the Passover, if you look in the book of Exodus. But he delayed it to the second month in order for the priest to be properly consecrated so that all things could be done according to the will of God. And I find that very interesting. You know, they could have went ahead and just done it, but they wanted to do it with the priest consecrated to be able to do the things that they were called to do by God. The Bible tells us that a great number of people came. to celebrate this feast. A multitude of people came. So he's having an effect on these people immediately. He's, you know, here is a nation that has been steeped now in idolatry for some time, and yet now he's calling them back to God, and there is a response to that call. And the first thing they do, all these people come into town, they come into Jerusalem, and they're preparing for the Passover, and the first thing that this multitude is called to do is to go throughout the city and tear down all the altars at the corners of the streets. And the people take down the altars, and they tear them, and they take them outside of the city, and they throw them into the valley of Kidron, so that they are no longer sinful altars throughout the city. So Hezekiah calls the people to righteousness. Hezekiah then collected tithes for the priests and the Levites, and he himself, you know, as king, he certainly could have called himself or said that he himself was above all that. He's king, right? But Hezekiah does not make such a stand. Instead, he goes and every sacrifice, both the morning and the evening sacrifices, he brought out of his own possessions to give at those times. To give something back to God. He had been blessed. He is king. You know, he has been given the opportunity to serve and he's making the most of it. Hezekiah led, when we look at that particular situation, they took out of his own goods. He didn't just take of the goods of Israel that he had access to. He took from his own money, his own possessions, and he gave daily to God. Hezekiah is leading by example, isn't he? It's one thing to ask people, you know, Jesus leads us by example. There is nothing that Jesus Christ asked you or me to do that he himself did not do as well. He lived this life. He suffered every temptation we've suffered. He has gone through the pain and the heartache of this world. He has died. He asked nothing more of you and me than he did himself. He leads by example, by the example of his life. And so did Hezekiah. And friends, in the church today, whether it's elders or deacons or preachers or teachers, or however you may lead in the Lord's church, and I hope that you're seeking to find a place that you can step in and help, lead by example. Show other people what they need to be by the way that you are. It makes all the difference. It removes hypocrisy from our lives. As a result of these things that Hezekiah did, 2 Chronicles 31 and verses 20 through 21 states, "Thus Hezekiah did throughout all Judah, and he did what was good, right, and true before the Lord his God. Every work which he began in the service of the house of God in law and in commandment, seeking his God, he did with all his heart, and he prospered." Wouldn't it be nice to be able to put our name to that statement? Everything we do by commandment of God. I believe there's a verse in the New Testament, right? Colossians chapter 3, "Let all that you do in word or deed be done in the name of the Lord," right? Sounds a lot like what Hezekiah said that he did. He did it with all his heart. And he did it for God. He didn't do it for the vanity of the position. Now, he's going to suffer. He's going to struggle with vanity. But he didn't do it here. He did these things for God. And he did it with all of his heart. And because of that, he prospered. Those people that serve God will prosper. Now, I'm not, that's not a, you know, you'll get more money in your bank account, but you'll prosper. God will take care of you. You will be blessed. Always. During the reign of Hezekiah, there was a lot of prophetic activity. The prophet Isaiah prophesied pretty much during the entirety of Hezekiah's reign. Micah was the rural, he was kind of the, I guess you could say, the country prophet. He was outside the city. And he was prophesying during this time. And even Hosea continued his prophecies in the early portions of Hezekiah's reign. So a lot of God speaking to the people during this time. A lot of things going on. A lot of things being said by God through the prophets at this particular moment in history. Hezekiah was reigning when the Assyrian king Shalmaneser attacked and destroyed the northern kingdom and carried them off into captivity. So, you know, I think at that point, you gotta think, why didn't they see this? And understand that God will not put up with it. You know, prophet after prophet after prophet went to the northern kingdom and said the same things that Isaiah and other prophets are saying to the southern kingdom. And yet somehow, when you get to the days of Jeremiah, the people just don't seem to think God will really do it. Well, they got all kinds of reasons why God won't do it. Why He won't destroy the city of Jerusalem. Well, this is where the temple is. Certainly He wouldn't destroy the city, regardless of what kind of godless people live in it, because His temple's here. They were wrong. Folks, today when we live today and we come up with all kinds of reasons why God won't let this nation go or won't let this nation fall, but let me tell you what, we need to get away from that. Because God doesn't care about the nation. He cares about what kind of people live in it. And He can let one fall and raise up another and overnight. He has done it time and time and time again in history. And it's an amazing thing to look at and see. After the capture of Israel, Assyria becomes a direct threat to Judah as well. There were those in Judah who they don't want to trust in God. They don't think that, and it's the same mistake that Hezekiah's father made. He wanted to make this alliance with Assyria because he was afraid of Israel and the Aramites. And yet, in the end, God destroyed them with Assyria, but brought Assyria right down upon them too. And so it was not what God wanted. God said, I will take care of you. And even offered a sign of that. And yet He rejected it. So here we are again. They're being threatened by a much stronger country, a much stronger army. And the people are not looking to God. But just like Ahaz, they're looking for a country they can ally themselves with. Who can I get that's bigger and stronger? At least if we join up with them, we can be allies and we can be equally as strong as the Assyrians and most of the people of that day. And there was a strong political party running in that time that wanted to turn to Egypt off the southern border of the southern kingdom. Listen to what Isaiah said to those people. Woe to those who go down to Egypt for help. You know, right there, you need to stop and think. Woe to those that go down to Egypt for help, who rely on horses, who trust in multitude of their chariots, but do not look to the Holy One of Israel or seek help from the Lord. Oh, folks, we need to read that text. Because you getting through this life and you enduring the things that this life has nothing to do with your bank account. It has nothing to do with what you have. It has everything to do with who you trust in. It wasn't going to be armies that saved Judah. It was going to be God. If they were to be saved, God would save them. If they went on their own, they would most likely fall. And you know, we need to remember that that is the case in our lives, that we trust, we put all of our hope in God. That we do not trust in what our abilities are, or how smart we may be, or how much money we may have, or whatever it is. We don't trust in those things because those things are passing away. Those things will not get us into eternity. And they certainly will not get us through this life. Well, after Isaiah makes that prophecy in Isaiah 30 and 31, we see that after the defeat of Israel, Sargon II becomes king of the Assyrian nation and immediately launched a military campaign. He drove right down the coast of Israel through the territory of the Philistines. He drove right through them, conquered all of them, and went right up to the gates of Egypt and subjugated Egypt. Defeated them and made them pay tribute. Well, what are you going to do now? Right? We're trusting in Egypt to save us. These people that were there in Israel going, oh, we'll trust in Egypt, they'll help us. They're gone. Now you're in a pickle, aren't you? Who are you going to turn to? Now you're surrounded. Well, Isaiah was right. That's not a big surprise. But during the Egyptian and Philistine campaign, Sargon II died. And his son Sennacherib became king. And he was a very successful military commander, but he was extremely arrogant and extremely evil and was hated by everybody. And I'm not just talking about the Judah or the enemy nations. I'm talking about his own people hated him. He was a despised and despicable man. And even his own sons hated him, according to 2 Kings chapter 19 and verse 37. But he becomes king, and Sennacherib then turns right around and he invades Judah. Just goes right at him. And the country surrounding Judah. He conquers each and every one of them. This is one of the most best documented invasions and military campaigns in ancient history. It is documented very precisely as to what he did in this campaign, right up until the point that it ends. We don't get as much historical documentation as to why it ended. But he went through there and he conquered city after city and nation after nation until he had surrounded Jerusalem and even launched the battle against the fortified city of Lachish. And you've probably seen those reliefs, the carvings of Lachish, where it has the little Assyrian soldiers ascending the walls as the Jews tried to fight and defend it, but they would not be able to. We have the prism of Sennacherib and the relief of the Battle of Lachish, and they are in the British Museum, and they tell of this campaign in detail. Now, I've been to the British Museum. I can't remember seeing them. But that was because I arrived at the British Museum at 4:10 and it closed at 5 o'clock. The British Museum's big, folks. The guard actually said, "Sir, you do know we close in 50 minutes, right?" I said, "Yep." I made it through everything. I didn't get to read much, though. But I got to see some mummies and things like that. So I'm sure I saw it, but I can't remember it at this point. Well, this invasion took place in 702 B.C., you know, for just a moment at the beginning of this invasion, it looks like Hezekiah is going to lose his faith. You know, there's just a moment where we look at Hezekiah and we go, "Oh no, here we go." Because the first thing Hezekiah does is he sends tribute to Sennacherib in an effort to appease him, to try to stop him from continuing the invasion. And this is in 2 Kings chapter 18, verses 14 through 16. But it appears through the preaching of Isaiah that Hezekiah's faith was strengthened in God. You know, Isaiah's right there on the scene. He is constantly talking to these kings. He's constantly preaching. He was constantly preaching to the ones that didn't want to hear him, such as Ahaz. But here is Hezekiah, who seems to have an interest in what Isaiah wants to say, and he listens to Isaiah, and Isaiah strengthens his faith in God. And Isaiah told him, he said, "Assyria is like a great tree, and God is going to prune the branches." He's going to chop them right off. You don't need to worry about this. God will take care of this. That's Isaiah chapter 10, verse 5 and verse 33. When the Assyrians arrived at Jerusalem, they demanded that Hezekiah surrender. Hezekiah told the men on the wall, I love this. Now, this is a man of faith right here. He said, "Don't even acknowledge they're there." So, you know, the little Assyrian dudes, or however many of them there were, walk up to the wall. The men on the wall won't even pay attention to them. They're completely ignoring them. Well, that's a slap in the face too, isn't it? That's just to slap Sennacherib in the face and say, "You're not even important enough to respond to." They were not to respond. They were not to say yay or nay. We're going to ignore them. And that's exactly what they did. In Sennacherib's writings, in the record of this campaign, these were his words. He said, "I shut Hezekiah up like a canary in a cage." He had everything conquered around him. There was nothing left but Jerusalem. And that's all. And you know, but if you're a bird and you're in a room with a cat, the safest place in the world for you to be is the cage. Remember how many times Sylvester tried to get in that cage with Tweety Bird? And Tweety Bird was fine as long as he stayed in that cage, right? Jerusalem was a fortified city. It would be able to hold off direct attacks with relative ease. And the only thing that could really hurt Jerusalem is a prolonged siege, which is just as hard on the army that sets the siege as it is on the city that endures it. And so they were pretty safe as long as Hezekiah stayed in Jerusalem. He was safe. He was like a bird in a cage. Sennacherib had it right. But that was a fairly safe place for him to be at that time. Well, Sennacherib, after the whole incident of ignoring him, Sennacherib moves his forces closer to Jerusalem and sent Hezekiah a threatening letter. Hezekiah read this letter. I love this. He took it to the temple. He didn't read it when he first got it. He took that letter to the temple and he spread it out before the Lord, it says. Isn't that wonderful? Here comes the threatening letter. "I'm going to put it out here before you, Lord. I want you to read it with me. Because we're in this together, right?" And he reads the threatening letter from Sennacherib there in the presence of the Lord. Now Isaiah once again assured Hezekiah, Sennacherib would not enter the city. This is what Isaiah said. He will not enter the city, nor will he even shoot an arrow. Now, there's this enormous army out there, hundreds of thousands of men. And you got this man telling you, they ain't going to get in the city. They're not going to even shoot an arrow at us. The person that doesn't have faith is going to go, you're right, Isaiah. Let's get the swords out, right? Hezekiah listens to him and he trusts in him. He believes Isaiah. He believes the word of the Lord. And that very night after Isaiah read this letter before the Lord, he read it with the Lord. That same night, the Lord sent His angel into the camp of the Assyrians, right? And that next morning, they woke up with 185,000 less men. For 185,000 died in the night. And the army was left in ruins. Sennacherib took whatever was left of his army. We don't know the total number. 185,000 is a lot, though, even by itself. But he took whatever was left of his army. He returns to Nineveh, the capital of the Assyrian Empire, where his two sons kill him and take control of the empire. You know, he trusted in the Lord. Now, there's going to be times in our lives where we face difficult times. Just as difficult as having a massive army surrounding us and looking to destroy us. And you can imagine the stress that was upon Hezekiah and upon the people. But yet he trusted in God. And all the stresses that we may have in this life, we trust in God to help us through them. So that He will give us help. He will bless us. But God is not going to help those that don't think He'll help them, don't believe He can help them or will help them. Why would He do that? He didn't for the Israelites. If they didn't trust in Him, they didn't get the help. If we don't trust Him, we don't get it either. And we wonder sometimes, why ain't God helping me? Maybe it's because you don't really believe He will. Because God does help His people. You know, I always think about Elisha, one of my favorite stories, where he's in the city and it's surrounded by the Syrian army, not the Assyrian, but the Syrian army. And his servant is all panicky. He gets up in the morning, right, and he walks out and he sees all these soldiers, this army around, and he's all panicky, and Elisha's calm. He says, it's going to be all right. And finally, Elisha prays and says, Lord, open his eyes that he might see, right? And the servant looks, and surrounding the army is angels, completely surrounding them. And the army was struck blind, and Elisha led them back home. But God takes care. Sometimes we need to pray for God to open our eyes, don't we? That we can see His power and what He's willing to do in our lives. Well, after that event, I figure this next event is the event that everybody knows about Hezekiah. The event where Isaiah walks into Hezekiah's. How would you like this to happen to you? You know, I guess, you know, have a prophet walk into your house and tell you this, put your house in order because you're about to die. You know, I mean, that's just saying you're a dead man. Put your house in order. And it says that Hezekiah turned his face away and wept and prayed to the Lord about what was told to him. And the Lord said, I've heard. He told Isaiah to go back to him. He said, I've heard your prayer. I've seen your weeping. And I will give you 15 more years. That's Isaiah chapter 38, verses 9 through 12. And then he says, I will also give you a sign. I like these signs. His father was given a sign. His father was given the sign of the child born to a virgin. But here he's given a sign as well. He says, go to your stairwell and watch the shadows. Now, shadows move with the sun, right? And they always move in the same direction because the sun always moves in the same direction. But the sun went backwards. And it moved 10 degrees or 10 steps in the other direction. And that was the sign from God that this would be so. There's something I think we don't think about. I know we often use Hezekiah when we talk about prayer and the fact that he prayed and got 15 more years of life. But I want to approach this from a different direction. Maybe Hezekiah should have just trusted in God to begin with. Maybe he should have accepted death And you go, Nathan, why in the world would you say that? Because after that took place, he fathered a son named Manasseh. And Manasseh would take the throne at 12 years old and would be the most evil and horrible king that Judah had. He literally filled the streets of Jerusalem with innocent blood. Maybe God knew better in that situation. Maybe it would have been better for Hezekiah to have accepted death than an extension of life. Remember Jeroboam's son that God, through the prophet, said, I'm going to take him because there's something good in him and I don't want to happen to him what's going to happen to the rest of his family. So he took him as a child. God sees the bigger picture, doesn't he? And we trust in him and not in our own desires and our own wills. Well, after this time, he was rebuked later in life by Isaiah again when he boastfully showed the treasures of Judah to the Babylonians. And this is what I was telling you about a while ago. He's going to have a little trouble with vanity. He took them and showed them. He wanted to appear to be big time to the Babylonians. So he took, instead of trusting God and just being satisfied with that, he wanted to appear big before other people. So he took them down and showed them all his treasures. Not really his treasures, are they? He showed them off, as if that was what Israel would be about. And Isaiah told him that those same Babylonians that you just showed off all the treasure to, in the near future, they're going to take them all back to Babylon. They're all going to be theirs because they're going to conquer Judah. Last thing about Hezekiah is that he was a great builder. He built a tunnel to bring water into the city of Jerusalem. It went through 1,749 feet of bedrock. And it went right into the pool of Siloam, which we read about in the New Testament. This enabled the city to better withstand a siege that they thought was coming by the Assyrians. He also doubled the size of Jerusalem, built new large walls that we have excavated to find that Hezekiah's walls were 18 feet in width. Hezekiah was a man in his life who overcame his being raised by a godless man to be a man of God. He had moments of doubt and poor judgment, but always, like David, he came back to God. Maybe, you know, that's another reason why he said that he walked in the footsteps of David. David certainly had his flaws, and he certainly had his moments where he was not a good example, but David always knew where to fix it, to go back to God. Hezekiah not only built great buildings and structures, he built an environment for faithful people of God to flourish, if they would only choose to do so. Like Hezekiah, we can overcome whatever is in our past to be the people, or to be people who give their lives to Christ, to be people of God. We can overcome our moments of doubt, our moments of poor judgment, because Jesus Christ will forgive. 1 John chapter 2 and verses 1 and 2 says, My little children, these things I write unto you, that you sin not. That's our goal. But he says, but if you do sin, you have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous, who's a propitiation for our sins and not for ours only, but for the sins of the whole world. We have an opportunity to overcome our failings if we only turn to the one who can forgive them. And like him, we can be builders. We build on the rock. We build on the rock of Jesus Christ when we hear what he says and we do it. May we be in those ways like Hezekiah, that we might be a person that it says that we walk like David did, someone who was a man after God's own heart. This evening, if you have not been that, if you are not a child of God, we hope and pray that you'll make the decision to become one. If you're a child of God, maybe you realize that your life has not been walking in those kind of steps. You haven't been following the way that Jesus would have you to go. Once again, return to the path. If we can assist you, we want to do so. Won't you let us as we stand and as we sing.